the sequence of events that happens here feels incredibly important. And I was looking closely as I read it for my second time when I was taking notes. Because Trevor, you're right. He gets tossed aside by the soldiers. He finds himself with the rock in his hands. He realizes that he could choose violence. He could attack the soldier with the rock. He wants to, and he doesn't. He chooses not to. I think that's important. And then the soldier attacks him with a red glow in his eyes after talking to something we can't see. And then Zeth fights back, but then fights back very violently and brutally kills the soldier. And so I'm left with this, okay, do I want to say, good job, Zeth, you chose not to kill and only defended yourself? Or is there more here?
Welcome back to Following Noah on a Stormlight podcast. This week is 239, and we are in chapters 37, 38, and 39 of Wind and Truth. We get some epigraphs, we get some new characters, and we get the death of a dear character. Paul, how are you?
I'm a little torn up. We were talking about animals.
So somebody else.
Oof.
Wow. Too soon, Trevor. Too soon. No, I'm kidding. That was funny, actually. Yep. Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. We're once again getting Adolin and Zeth chapters, so I'm always tuned in, always engaged. Also, definitely adding on to what I said last episode, Adolin has become our world-building character, but he's, I think, soon going to become the war character, you know, action sequence. So, you know, give and take.
Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a little disturbed by the fact that you guys are going to joke about death and dismemberment and then not even talk about what it is that you're joking about, so that people listening to this a year from now are just going to think we're terrible, sadistic people, but it's fine. We'll roll with it. It's all good.
You're right. We should disclaimer it. It is death and dismemberment of an animal. So, like, there's...
You didn't explain that. Better. Yeah. You didn't explain that.
You're correct. There is a character that has been dismembered. It is an animal, so it's a little bit less bad, but yes.
I mean, isn't it in the UK they use the expression when they're upset, like, I'm absolutely gutted, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I feel like that's relevant here, so, you know, just throwing that out there.
Paul, do you have two words for 37,
38, and 39? I do have two words, and I deleted them. My two words were, as best as I can remember... I deleted them.
As long as you stay silent, the auto editor cuts it out, so everybody just thinks you had them right on your brain there.
So yeah, I should have just given y'all a good half a minute pause. My words are
absolutely gutted.
Do I need to buy you time with mine?
Go right ahead. Yeah, I literally. So, fun fact: I'm gonna tell the story. I wrote them in one of our channels, like all in the text box, because I didn't have like a pen with me. And then I hit enter, and I was like, "Oh, well, wait, no, I don't want to send it as a message." So I deleted the message, and then now I don't have it written down. So, yes, go right ahead, Elliot, and I'll re-remember them.
While you resurrect your words, I'll share mine, which are very closely related to the discussion we just had. My two words are choosing violence. And I picked them because it's a very specific thought that flashback Zeth has in chapter 38. And I feel like it's a really pivotal moment. I'm excited to talk about it. But then also, I think it relates to Adolin And there's a few chapters where he's starting to muse about, is war who I am? And kind of reflecting back on the fact that he's been a part of war for many years now, but he kind of like ends chapter 39 on this, I don't think I love battle anymore. And that felt like a contrast to the Choosing Violence Zeth chapter.
Fair enough. Paul, I tried to go into the moderator log of the Discord to try to figure out what you deleted, and I couldn't find it, so I can't help you.
That's okay. I remembered my words. My two words are tipping point. And this, I think, is for both of the stories that we're covering, and I'm glad I remembered them because I thought it was kind of clever. First, of course, the elephant in the room, or sorry, the sheep in the room, is Molly, Zeth's sheep and beloved, pet companion.
Are we gonna beat that dead horse all night? Is that what's gonna happen?
Oh man, if only it were a horse, man. Yeah, I think we are, unfortunately. I had no intentions of making jokes about it. It's gonna be reverent and serious here.
Yeah, my bad.
It's serious. It's a tipping point. It's crucial to Zeth's, I don't know, psyche. Well, anyways,
apparently we're misspelling Molly in the outline too. Elliot, do we want to clear this up?
We do actually need to clear this up. This is actually starting to bother me because you guys have done it multiple times now. Y'all put in the outline, RIP Molly. Which absolutely, rest in peace, poor Molly. I'm partially traumatized by this chapter. I can't even imagine how torn up Zeth is. But I think it is now time for a spell check. Would the two of you like to attempt to spell the name of Zeth's sheep?
So you buzzed us on Molly, which is obviously how you spell Molly.
That's a traditional correct spelling of that
name. And I did think about this. The reason I went with a traditional spelling is because we're in Shinovar. We're supposed to be more traditional Western culture. You know, like you spell Molly how you would spell Molly. Because that's incorrect, I'll then go with Molli.
Paul, you wanna tap this?
Since Trevor hasn't done this before, well, my thoughts were you should say if he's right or not, and then I will. But I'm gonna intentionally be facetious here. I'm very sorry. I'm gonna go with Mawlie. 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 That's what I'm gonna go with.
More correctly represent her current state. Is that what you're saying?
I should say that my sincere guess was gonna be Molli. That's what I was gonna guess. I was like, it's either Y or IE were my initial guesses. And then Elliot was like, we should do a spell check. And so I'm like, okay, that would be my guess is ending in an I. But for this purpose, since I'm not the only one doing the spell check, I'm going to say Mawlie. Mawlie.
So if this is Trevor's first spell check, then he is off to 100% record because it is not Y, it is not IE, but it is just simply I, which is kind of a little odd, and I don't know why.
Sorry, I interrupted somebody there talking about something important to spell check.
My tipping point, my words. Yes, my words were for that, of course, but also because I think we are nearing the tipping point, you know, like a Helm's Deep moment with Adolin. They're preparing for war, like we're getting some world building stuff, like we said, we're learning more about like Azamir and the people and Yonagon and all the stuff going on. But it's because we're setting up for a siege defense, essentially. And so I think we're nearing the tipping point for that. So I felt that was also relevant as well. So those are my two words. Ta-da.
This is by far the most disjointed intro we've had in a long time. Elliot, do you have two words?
Yeah, goodness.
Well, and the disjointed continues because I've already done my two words. However, I do have a brief summary of events for you.
You did your two words?
Yeah,
because I did that to cover time for me because mine were deleted.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's. I was like, I distinctly remember asking Paul first, but you're right. Okay.
You're adding to it further.
I understand now. Okay. Brief summary, and then we're going to cover epigraphs. I'm really excited about epigraphs, guys. The book. Yeah.
We will eventually get to these chapters, people. We promise. Stick with us. Brief summary of events. Chapter 37. Adolin is still kind of walking down the defenses, putting plans in place, arguing with the Azish general, talking with Yonagon. They talk about chess for like a good two or three pages. Adolin comes up. Oh, sorry. Towers.
Different game. Yeah.
Adolin talks quite a bit with Aladar's daughter, May, who is now his like scribe person on the battlefield. And they have some slightly awkward encounters, and then talk more about strategy and things like that. Chapter 38 jumps back over to Zeth. Flashback Zeth. This is the chapter we've been joking about so incessantly, where baby Zeth is traumatized by the death of his sheep and also comes up against some far more scary things, which I don't even know what just happened at the end of that chapter. Curious to see what you guys think. Chapter 39 spins back over to Adolin, where we get the, you coined it well there, Paul, Helm's Deep moment of here's the final breath before the storm and the attacking army charges in.
We do end this chapter with "it began," period, which shout out to Adolin. Tim for that cliffhangers. Thanks for that, Tim. Okay, before we get to 37, 38, and 39. We're going to cover epigraphs from yesterday or from last week and this. So let me read them. There is no author, or at least no cited author, in these epigraphs. They are simply ambiguous statements.
Yeah, no like source, no date, no nothing. We're used to way more info.
The time has come at last for our stewardship to end. Obviously, the passing of the Dawn Shard was the first indication that this event was near. However, we find many other signs. The impending events in Eerie are another sign. The Age of Transitions has arrived. I believe sincerely that the winds blowing in from the future indicate this will be the final confrontation of honor and odium. Any initial thoughts? I've got a couple.
Dawn Shard.
And it immediately made me think that this is authored by Mr. Kremling Man. I think the Kremlings are about to leave. Their stewardship is ending. They passed off their Dawn Shard. They're leaving. That's my initial thought.
Okay. I have to piggyback off of that, off of what you're saying. I did not think that was the case. I was not... There were some names that popped into my head maybe regarding this, but that was not who. However, I had a theory a long time ago. I say a long time ago, maybe two or three episodes ago, that didn't really fit into... It never really came up and forgot about it, and I've held on to it before. I don't remember how long ago this was, but Ba'edo Mishram says something about her children. Something about how her and like I said, this is rough because it's ambiguous. I don't remember when exactly or where or exactly what she says, but it's something about either my children are in danger, my children are something along those lines, right? My theory at that time, what was going off in my head was, I wonder if the sleepless are somehow correlated with Ba'edo Mishram. They could be debunked. Do we know if that's debunkable?
Are you talking Ba'edo Mishram or are you talking Ja'anat? Because Ja'anat talks a lot about her, like her children and her spren and stuff like that.
I think you're right. I think I got that mixed up. Yes. Okay. Because I think it's, maybe it was around the time that Shallan was with the, like, see Ja'anat not too long ago.
Yeah.
It comes up there. I think that's the spot.
Okay. Yeah, because Ja'anat does refer to her children quite a bit. And it's in reference to all these corrupted spren that she's passed around to some of the Ghost Bloods, to Renarin, to Relaine, and that's who she means by her children, if that's what you're thinking of.
Perhaps so. I might have to go look back, because I'm really questioning. I'm questioning myself here, because I feel like there were other mentions as well, but something led me to believe that the Sleepless were involved a while ago. So as you say that, I'm trying to bring it up, but I don't remember. It's less relevant on my mind. It's been probably a month.
Okay.
That's my guess. But anyways, aside from that, I did not think that the Sleepless were specifically involved in this, looking at these epigraphs. But I'm curious to know what you think, Elliot. My thoughts were more towards the Eerie, which I don't know if Elliot has anything else on this part. But
I wasn't sure. I didn't honestly have a good guess. The Eerie is interesting, but one of these epigraphs mentions the Eerie specifically, right? So I almost wonder if they'd be talking about themselves in the third person if this is true.
Well,
discounting it by any means, because they're pretty mystical.
I think talking about themselves in the third person might actually be happening anyway, because they say, obviously the passing of the Dawn Shard was the first indication that this event was near. However, we find many other signs. That made me think, collectively, the Sleepless, like we have seen, you know, and it made me think, okay, who knows what's going on in Roshar? Who really is keyed into all the different things that are happening? They mentioned the Eerie, the Dawn Shard, the Wind, Honor, Odium. Whoever is writing this is well aware of what is happening. Who is the steward of Roshar? I went ahead and threw out the Kremling guys as like whoever they were appointed by. We can have that discussion. I need to go back and read Dawn Shard, I think. But they obviously are well informed on Roshar, and maybe they're about to leave, but that was my number one suggestion.
I do think that the Age of Transitions has arrived. Feels like a key fulcrum point of all of this. This seems like a paradigm shift kind of thing. The Sleepless, if this is them, seem to be very hands-off. They don't impact the events of the world. They're just kind of there. So what's going to change about that? Is this leaving? Is this we get involved? Is this we're giving up the world? Good luck. See ya.
Any other contenders before we move on to 37? I don't believe are we still on day three? I don't believe day three is super long, so I'm not even sure if there's going to be that much more to these epigraphs. So we can tackle it again when we get it. But
I would agree.
Go ahead, Paul.
I was just going to say I'm very much thinking this is not the Sleepless. I'm sorry to go back to
okay.
it. I don't think that this is like you were talking about the whole like the phrasing we think and all these things and the stewards of Roshar. I think that this is obviously very cryptic because it doesn't say quote from in world wind and truth or something like that, you know? So it's likely some other source, but I feel like this is going to be someone more relevant and not from the, I feel like this might be from a council of people that we know. Like, I think it would very much make sense for it to be that, but I don't think it will be our Sleepless, even though I really want our Sleepless to get involved in the story somehow. I want that to become very relevant. But aside from that, I'm really unsure. It is quite cryptic. I'm very curious to see what the rest of day three is going to have regarding...
What's epigraphs. Mr. Kremlingman's actual name? Arklo or something?
I think you're right. Right.
I think you're exactly right. Like Arklo.
Yeah, Arklo, I think. Arklo.
Maybe so.
All right. Adolin is walking around the dome even more. and discussing more with the general, we get a new character who shows up as Aladar's daughter, May, one of Adolin's many exes. And they kind of have an awkward exchange. It's not that bad. They're pretty civil about it. And she is an expert archer, which we haven't really explored much archery on Roshar. We did a little bit at the end of Words of
Rock Ratings. Rock is hurt.
Well, but so here's my disclaimer. We did a little bit at the end of Words of Radiance, and it was Navani was just toying with the idea of levitating platforms. She had invented this like paired fabrial thing where if you throw a fabrial off a cliff, then the platform goes up like 100 feet in the air. You can put like 30 archers on there and they can sit there forever. But you're right. At the end of Oathbringer, Rock has a single shot that saves Kaladin's life. So I'm maybe doing archery on Roshar a little bit of a disservice, but I feel like we haven't really explored like an expert archer on Roshar yet.
I wouldn't consider it explored, but there is also, isn't it an Oathbringer? They talk about it, like whether it was a Dalinar flashback or a current day thing, they talk about the shard bows and things like that, of like it's not actual like a shard, you know, plate or blade piece, but it's you know, really they're high tech, as strong as a bow can be, to where if you hit a shard bearer, like it crack the plate type of thing. Yeah, you're right, but we don't see like a professional archer, like the cream of the crop in that regard. So I think that is cool.
Shard bows are made of steel, and it requires shard plate to wield the bow, is what a shard bow
That's
is.
Right. That's right. Okay.
However, in Oathbringer, now you've made me think more, there's an expert sniper who like takes Dalinar out in a battlefield in a flashback. And then his soldiers like run and go get him, and he thinks he's going to get decapitated, and instead he hires him because he's like impressed that he shot him through the chest from like 300 yards away or whatever it was. So I don't know. That there's more archery than I'm giving Sanderson credit for, I guess.
There's archery, but there's definitely not a like archer fanatic character, which the more you talk about that actually makes me wonder if that's an intentional choice by Brandon, because that is absolutely a trope, you know, Legolas, Katniss Everdeen. I'm sure that there's a dozen other characters that could be, you know, chucked out there as a character who's crazy good with a bow.
Yeah.
And
it's my dream as a kid, by the way, man.
Right?
Oh yeah.
So cool.
But I wonder if Brandon like is like intentionally moving away from that a little bit and not including a swashbuckling archer character, because maybe that's a little overdone.
I'm such a sucker for it. I would absolutely go for it if they had an archer character from the beginning. I mean, you like sort of get that with Rock, but not obviously not the same, like as we're saying.
But the opening sequence, chapter 13 of The Way of Kings, when Adolin and Dalinar and Sadeas are fighting a chasm fiend, Sadeas has a shard bow. But that's the only time that Sadeas ever had a bow. So anyway, May is introduced. Apparently she's some championship archer from the Women's League. And Adolin says, hey, go find some armor. And she's very happy to go do so. So are we going to have another... Is May going to go anywhere? I wasn't expecting this many new characters to be introduced on Wind and Truth, but here we are.
Yeah, I don't know. We've got a number of minor characters here at this battle where it's really Adolin and Yonagon are the only two that we've really seen much of before this. Yeah. I can't decide what that means for the result of this battle we're about to get into. Does that mean this is going to be a bloodbath and absolutely all of these people are going to die? Is it something completely different? I don't know.
I kind of wonder if these are our new leaders moving forward into the back five, if we're introducing some like seeds of new characters that we're not going to explore yet, but the names have been mentioned before this. I don't know.
I did notice that one of these characters that's kind of randomly mentioned is a Truth Watcher. And yep. I just keyed into that because Truth Watchers seem to be rather rare. And I'm wondering if that might actually be important. Is something going to happen where our Truth Watchers are going to be the key? And the fact that Adolin is near one might be important.
Okay. I assume she's not a corrupted Truth Watcher and she can't see cool paintings of the future, but
right.
I don't know. Maybe she can. Towers. Paul, do you have a Towers rant? You have it in the outline.
Oh, man. Not a rant, just more so to say they've referenced it a couple times now. This Towers, you know, it sounds, Elliot said chess earlier. It sounds like a chess, like a somewhat like ancient, longstanding strategy tactics type of game. And I'm like, man, I really want to play Towers. Like, I mean, I love board games. I love strategy games. And so that just sounds perfect. I'm really hoping that he sets this up enough. Maybe we get a scene of Adolin and Yonagon playing Towers. They kind of say that at some point, like, yeah, we should go play Towers sometime. I really want to see that, and I really want later on for Dragonsteel to produce a Towers game. That'd be awesome. I'd love that so much. So that was my main rant. But I do want to say, so that comes up talking with Yonagon. I think that's I have some thoughts on that. I think it's been interesting. Once again, I'm afraid that a character is being set up in order to have a meaningful death.
Yeah.
Which I feel like I'm saying that too often. You know, I think it raises the stakes. I think it certainly raises the stakes that we know who is falling if they lose the battle, right? So even more than like, oh, we say we're learning more about these characters. We're getting more perspective from them so that if they die, it's meaningful. I think it just, we have a little more skin in the game in this fight. It's not just Adolin we're worried about. You know, we know a little bit more about these people. I think that's why we're getting a lot of the characters involved here. Adolin's ex and all sorts of characters here.
His three like college buddies that come through the gate to help him out, that he has some, he rattles off like three or four names. And immediately I thought, okay, all three of these guys are going to die. Like they showed up and he names all three of them like, oh, it's so good to see you. I haven't seen you since, you know, we were doing some runs on the Shattered Plains. It's been years now. I'm like, yeah, these guys are toast.
You were probably right about that. That felt, they've thrown out so many names, and I think they're just trying to get relevant people in the battle. But those are very, respectfully, very irrelevant people. It's yeah. The first time we're hearing of them, and it's like, oh, that's my old friend,
right,
Joe over there, you know. And so, yeah, I assume Brandon is just trying to get us to have a little more investment into the people here before this fight goes down. So
into 39, and then we'll come back to 38. Adolin sends Maya into Shadesmar to like spy and do a head count of the fused as they come through. And the fused send a bunch of void spren through to scout as well. So there's an interesting kind of idea there of having your spren go do your scouting for you. It kind of seems like Maya's hiding out in the Beat Ocean, poking her head out or something. I don't know what was the visual in my head was kind of off there. But Maya is both in the physical realm and the cognitive realm at the same time, so she can do some spying for Adolin, which is kind of cool.
I was originally thinking that this was kind of a new thing because notably, Syl and Pattern, people like that, spend like that, can't do that. They're either in one or the other. And then I got thinking about it, and maybe we do kind of have a parallel to this in Venli. Isn't it Venli who can like pop into Shadesmar to check her surroundings and then come back?
Well, Timber. So Timber does some spying for Venli. Venli asks, hey, are there any voids spread in the room? Yeah. Timber says, no. All right, I can go ahead and do my my truth watching, talk to the stones or whatever she does.
Yeah. Sorry, you confused me with a couple things there, but yeah.
So, because that's how she gets lift out of her cage, right? She like melts the wall, pulls her out. I'm not making that up, right?
No. You said truth watching though, but we meant will shaping.
You're right.
Will shaping stuff. Yeah.
Thank you.
They're all one and only will shaper. So
yes. Sorry,
but then also doesn't she? She's like having secret meetings with her little club of singers and listeners, and she has to like pop in a Shadesmar to make sure none of the fused are eavesdropping on them.
Correct.
Anyway, all of that to say, this was pretty handy that Maya can do this and explain to us as unique because Adolin and Maya are not fully bonded, so she hasn't been pulled into the physical realm completely. Was the explanation?
That was the explanation. However, I did key into the fact that they used the term bonded. Adolin used the term our bond is different than a traditional Knight Radiant bond. And right. That made me think, okay, if we're doing cognitive realm rules, they now have a bond. Like he is bonded to Maya in any context of the word.
I feel like he has to be because they're speaking telepathically.
Right.
They're speaking in each other's minds. Surely that requires some kind of a bond. Now, obviously it's rather different from Kaladin and Syl, but yeah, that does feel like a step. One of the things we were talking about a lot actually coming into this book was, will Adolin become a Knight Radiant through the book? I feel like the answer at this point is kind of, sort of, but not really.
Yeah,
but still kind
of. I've had a lot of questions on this. It feels like Maya has just developed so much so fast. Right, they're communing telepathically. She's basically freely communicating with him now. It's not like it's hard for her to say things and stuff like that. You know, we get a mention that it's like easier for her to talk because the stuff that they're doing and the tactics and the warfare is up her alley and it's easy for her to talk about. But I don't know, it feels like a bit like rapid progression to me. Like, it was the big moment that she spoke. Like, that was the big moment. And we have all these questions of, like, so is she going to come back to life, if you will? Like, as in no longer be a Deadeye and, like, have a Nihil bond? And if Adolin becomes a Radiant, we're like, that's how it will happen, not from some other spren, right? But it's... I don't know. I feel like once again, this breaks the rules that I understand. Is it a different bond? Because if it is the Nihil bond, then shouldn't there have been oaths, the first ideal, if you will, and the ability to use investiture, use Stormlight? I feel like the answer would be yes. I don't understand the rules here. However, I do have to also say I think Maya and Adolin are awesome, so like I'm not too upset about it, but I've been a bit confused.
I wonder if we might be creating a definition difference between a Nahel bond and a Radiant bond. I wonder if in order to be a Knight's Radiant, you have to say the words, but I wonder if you could also have a Nahel bond without being a Knight Radiant, and I wonder if there's a distinction there.
I have one other thought that's been in my head about this. So we know that Dalinar is given in some way has given Adolin connection. He uses that to communicate with the people, which is really cool. How he, like, they speak, and then as he hears it and as it enters his brain, he hears it in his language that he understands, even to the point of, like, understanding inflection and, you know, the advanced things of fluency within a language, right? And he's really impressed with, you know, how that works, how Dalinar was able to give him that. Do you think that in some way that increased connection has anything to do with this? Like, is allowing him to do things that shouldn't happen with Maya, such as the telepathic bond and things like that? Or is this natural and it's just uncharted territory because no one has cared for their shard blade like Adolin has, and no one has gone to Shadesmar and been an advocate for their dead eye sprint before type of thing? Like, is that what we're seeing, or is this some, like, anomaly?
Capital C connection definitely has got to be a big part of this. I do feel like maybe Adolin has built up such a strong connection to Maya over the years that it's allowing him to break some of the rules. That's my guess.
I would lean more towards Adolin is doing this himself, and Dalinar giving him the translation connection hasn't directly affected Maya. Now, I could see it. Like, that's a good theory. I'm not going to shoot you down on it, but I would lean more towards the Adolin has put in the work. Adolin has cared for Maya. Adolin has gone to Lasting Integrity to make a case for the Alethi. Maya helps him. Like, I'm way more on the Maya and Adolin are healing themselves.
Well,
instead of Dalinar's helping.
And maybe I should clarify. I think that's exactly what is happening. I think that Adolin is building, like, old school, slowly over time, building up his own connection to Maya. All those things are strengthening his magic system connection. Dalinar just has the cheat code version of that. He can reach in and turn up and turn down and reconnect connection. Other people build connection also, but sure, through other means. Like, I'm guessing maybe Adolin has, like, a abnormally strong connection with Maya in that he's been so intentional about his Shardblade and with her over the last few books that he has the hard way built up such a connection with her.
I agree with that as well. I wasn't trying to say this is one or the other, but for me, it just feels like we've had this, like, it's been a big emphasis on this slow, meticulous, unaided, uninvested growth of this capital C connection or bond with Maya. But yeah, but where I've been hung up on is how quick it's gone lately. I assume that's just to meet the needs of this book, which I don't have any major problems with. It's, you know, there's a lot going on. But two, with the bond, you might be right, Trevor, that a radiant bond is different from a Nihil bond, how we know it. But I don't know. I've hung so much up on this, like, the Nihil bond is such a big deal and the main way for this. But yeah, I don't know.
The only reason why I bring that up is because I think the Nahel bond predates the Knights Radiant. I think Noadon refers to a Nahel bond, and Noadon predates the Knights Radiant. That's the only... That's why I bring that up, is because I think there might be... Like, one obviously leads to the other, but they don't... It's squares and rectangles, you know?
No, that does make a lot of sense to me. I feel like it's just unclear to me on the rules of this Deadeye Spren. I'm like, should she be healing, or is she just always going to be, quote, dead, and, but also, like, alive? Like, is she going to be both? Or I was expecting, like, if this continues, which I'm all for, basically evidence that the Spren could come back. And I feel like we talked about this a long time ago, maybe in Oathbringer or something, about if Adolin successfully is able to bring Maya back, then, you know, you can apply that logic to maybe Honor, if Honor is dead or things like that. But you essentially do it the low and slow way. You know, Spren could come back in a way. And I don't know. Logically, I've been hung up on this a little bit, but I don't need to harp on that or linger on that anymore.
Anything else with our Alethi chapters before we head to Shidivar?
Just one thing I wanted to mention. There's a very brief but kind of interesting to me segment at the very end of chapter 37. Adolin ends up talking with Aladar about a few things. May is one of them, but there's a exchange where they talk about how they like what they're seeing with the Alethi being a people who build. And I thought that was kind of interesting, how the Alethi are so defined by their war. We've had that pounded into us of the Alethi are warlike. Their entire culture is built around this. They take their 8-year-olds into battle because that's just kind of who they are. They're bringing them up. And could this be hinting at like a shift into a culture that's more about culture and not so much violence or conquest?
I also keyed into that, and I did enjoy that. If you guys remember, Aladar back in the Way of Kings, or actually it's more like Words of Radiance. Aladar in Words of Radiance is one of the high princes who allies with Sadeas. And then right at the end of Words of Radiance, he's the guy who comes out with Dalinar to go on the assault. He flips right at the end. And then title of the chapter 37 is People Who Build. And then the title of chapter 38, which is the Shinovar chapter, is Those Who Subtract, which we'll talk about that in a little bit. But when I first read those two chapter titles on my audiobook, I was like, oh, we're going to get a Zeth chapter back to back. We're going to get a current day Zeth chapter and then a flashback Zeth chapter. No, we're applying People Who Build for the good of all Roshar, building up each other and this coalition thing to our modern day Alethi. And I thought it was really interesting to juxtapose that with the next chapter, which is Those Who Subtract, and where we're headed with Zeth, which is an interesting idea.
I concur.
Yeah, that was really clever. I did pick that up, which I absolutely love.
All right. So with all of our lighthearted banter at the beginning of this episode, this chapter is very dark, like extremely dark. I don't know if we've seen one like this since, I don't know, the Pursuer of last book of I'm going to tear your head off or whatever the Pursuer keeps yelling. 11-year-old Zeth walks in on some guards who don't care about their job, don't care about their religion. We're just here to fight off any guys who might show up, but they ran off hours ago. We're just here to drink your wine and eat your sheep. And traumatic is the best way to describe this chapter. Zeth is trying his best to cope with this situation as he walks in on it, and doesn't want trying to remember exactly how this plays out. About halfway through the chapter, he gets assaulted by these guys, and the stone kind of reveals itself to him. It's in the grass, hidden next to like the other rock or whatever, and he grabs it, and he has this internal dialogue of, oh, this is what the Spren want me to do. The Spren gave me this rock to fight back. And Zeth has a moment right before he does and says, no, this is a rock. I have the choice here of attacking this guy or not. And then the guy attacks him and he retaliates. But there's a moment where Zeth really thinks about it and says that this is not the Spren decision. This is my decision of whether to retaliate this guy for hitting Molly or eating Molly. And he doesn't. He only fights when the guy's beginning to glow red. So what do you guys think?
I thought this was huge, but I don't want to jump in too fast if our resident Zeth fanatic over there has any thoughts on this first.
No, I was going to say go ahead and jump in first. I have plenty to say, but go ahead and say what you're thinking.
Yeah, I'll share a couple thoughts that feed right off of what Trevor was talking about. I think this moment is really important. The sequence of events that happens here feels incredibly important. And I was looking closely as I read it for my second time when I was taking notes. Because Trevor, you're right. He gets tossed aside by the soldiers. He finds himself with the rock in his hands. He realizes that he could choose violence. He could attack the soldier with the rock. He wants to, and he doesn't. He chooses not to. I think that's important. And then the soldier attacks him with a red glow in his eyes after talking to something we can't see. And then Zeth fights back, but then fights back very violently and brutally kills the soldier. And so I'm left with this, okay, do I want to say, good job, Zeth, you chose not to kill and only defended yourself? Or is there more here? I feel like there's more here.
There's, well, before you chime in there, Paul, there's a nice creepy voice. It's a like ruin style at the end of this chapter, which we can talk about after we talk about Zeth. But like, obviously there's more going on here. At least one unmade involved, if not more. So that there's some cool, creepy ramifications of who's the soldier talking to, who's talking to Zeth after the soldier's dead. Did Zeth just inherit something from this soldier that he killed? Go ahead, Paul.
No, y'all are absolutely right. There's a lot here. And I'm really glad that both of y'all brought up the distinction. And you're right. It is very, I think, important to see that Zeth, in his anger, wants to fight back at these guards. They killed Molly and they're flaunting it. They're rubbing it in. They're being the worst that someone could be, you know. And he wants to even sees this, like, I don't know, almost allows himself a justification of, like, the Spren are saying to do this too because there's a rock right here, right? And what we've seen of his culture, like, I feel like that's very understandable and logical how he would get to that. But you're right, he pauses for a moment and thinks and decides not to, which, you're right, I'm reiterating the same point. I don't need to go on and on about it, but that is really important to see that he did originally withstand or choose not to. But, okay, we go on. Like you said, the red glowing eyes. I'm curious to talk about that, but I'm going to rewind a little bit. Before that, Zeth is talking with the guards, right? And they have an interesting conversation. Basically, these guards are saying, like, Zeth is onto them about subtracting, those who subtract, right? And he despises that. No one should subtract. It's the lowest you could be. Last time we saw Zeth flashback, he was talking with the farmer, someone who adds to society, right? Like the highest honor you could have, right? And here it's the bottom of the barrel, the worst you could be, those who subtract. These guards bring up an interesting point, and they kind of discount Zeth, you know, as a child who doesn't understand anything, right? They say, you don't understand, we all are subtracting. You're subtracting, you know, whatever, I'm not saying I agree with it, but the sentiment that we all are taking from society, not giving to society, yours just looks a lot prettier because you don't, you're not charged with the defending versus against people fighting and stuff, right? Like, you have it cushy, sit down, kid, like, type of thing, which was very, I thought was really well written and a really interesting philosophical thing that I wasn't expecting in this scene. I kind of was expecting all the other things that happened without that, and I thought it was really neat. So then, anyways, glowing red eyes, Zeth fights back, very vicious, very reminiscent to me of The Thrill. We talked about Unmade involved. This, in my head, has Thrill written all over it. Almost like the sensation of going into combat, borderline blacking out, and finding yourself with the dead body. You know, like, really brutal stuff. Trevor, you were talking about maybe multiple Unmade. Were you thinking of The Thrill, or were there, was it The Thrill and others you were thinking of? I'm curious to know what your thoughts were on that.
Sure. Yeah, let me set this up. So before this chapter, I've always equated glowing red eyes with The Thrill. That's where we've seen it 95% of the time. But that made me think, is that exclusive to The Thrill? Is this, does glowing red eyes equal The Thrill? And the answer I came to is actually no. The answer I came to is, I think it's more just an Unmade thing. Because Aesudan in Kolinar gets some glowing red eyes, and she's explicitly not hanging out with The Thrill. There are three Unmade in the tower in Kolinar Palace at the time. The Thrill is not one of them. It is Yelignar, the Heart of the Revel, and Ja'anat are all in Kolinar at the time Aesudan, Elikar's wife, swallows the sphere. Yelignar eats her from the inside out, blah, 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 blah. Great. Her eyes glow red without the presence of The Thrill. So that made me think, okay, I immediately thought we're going to see the introduction of this Unmade that's currently in current day Shinnevar hanging out there, which we know is not The Thrill. So we're going to find that Unmade somewhere. But my first reaction to this was, oh, The Thrill in 11-year-old Zeth time is hanging out in Shinnevar because there's some guards, there's some raiders that are raiding for reasons we don't know yet. Maybe this is the most violent location on Roshar at the time, and The Thrill could feasibly be hanging out here. That was my first thought. Then my second thought was, okay, there's obviously an Unmade here. The Thrill may not be involved, though. That was my thought, is this is probably The Thrill, but it could feasibly be something else. And my final conclusion is there is another Unmade that is not The Thrill that is involved, but The Thrill could also be involved.
I kind of got to similar but slightly different. I think I'm in the camp of this is not The Thrill. And I think we're meant to think it is. But I don't know that the modus operandi here actually matches with The Thrill, because these soldiers have already been through battle. They're after battle. That bloodlust, if you will, should have died a bit. That there's no violence happening here. So The Thrill should have moved on. And these scenes where they initially cast Zeth aside and then the soldier starts speaking to something and we're only getting half the conversation. He says some weird stuff where he's like, no, no, why would I do that? I'm already in enough trouble as is. He's just a kid. No. It seems like the voice is clearly saying, kill that kid.
That's the line that I thought of for Ruin. Do you remember Ruin in the third book of the Hero of Ages, where Ruin, whoever spiked, Ruin's just like, yo, kill that guy. Yo, go kill that guy. Or with Zane in the Well of Ascension. And that's what my brain went to, of hearing voices that just say, you know, go do some violence.
Yeah.
I need to say, I do agree with you, Elliot. The reason I brought the thrill into it, also to tack on to what you were saying earlier, Trevor, I wasn't equating red eyes with the thrill specifically. I think that is just the sign of the unmade here. But I've been trying to think about this unmade. We know that there's supposed to be another unmade in this area, so that you know, we're pretty keyed into it being one of these others. I'm kind of trying to remember the names. It was like Kemoerash or something. Mm-hmm. And then like was it the Black Fisher is the other one?
Yes, the Moloch.
Moloch.
The Black Fisher and Kemoerash, the Dust Mother. Yeah.
Okay. And like, we have some ideas, but no definites on what they do, right? Just clarifying.
Correct.
Yeah, because what you were talking about, Elliot, of this guy, this guard, hearing voices, probably saying "kill this kid," that's not the thrill. It's very possible that the thrill is here as well, but that is not the thrill.
That's where my head was going. Is it the thrill is not? At least it hasn't seemed to be like a voice. It's more just an urge.
Yes.
The thrill is specifically a very primal power. It's not.
Yes.
You don't talk to the thrill.
Yes, exactly. And the reason I, you know, I said this, I think, but I thought it by Zeth's reaction, where he kind of sort of has a tipping point and goes ballistic and like goes way too far. He doesn't just hit the guy and knock him out and run away. Like, he kind of brutalizes him. That has the thrill written all over it in my head. But I could also firmly believe that is something else. That's another of the unmade. This has me very curious. And then we also hear the voice afterward, right? It's possible that there's two unmade involved, two maximum cases, three, but still a bit unclear on that.
I'm purely basing this off of one word. I think this is the Dust Mother. I'll put my chips on the table. Because it says a soft voice blossomed in his mind. Here now, what are you? And Michael Kramer goes very feminine voice with it. So Dust Mother, that's where I went with it. That's where my money is.
I would also happen to agree. I think it makes sense. I think we're going to see something new, and it makes sense to have someone new because we kind of know the dialogue of our other, or the natures of our other unmade a bit better. So it makes sense to have something more devious here. I've just been really trying to put my finger on what is the specific aspect that this unmade characterizes, and I don't know. I keep in my head going back to the word spite, like the spiteful actions. I looked at the desire to hurt, essentially. Like desire to hurt, offend, or annoy. But you know, the guard was pretty spiteful of, like, you know, offending and annoying like everything for Zeth. You know, like it wasn't just I'm going to physically hurt you. It's like they left a bloody mess of Molly, and they kind of knew that would be offensive, you know, like, obviously.
And but
that's, yeah.
Yeah, I actually really like that, the word spite, because the scene opens with the soldiers, like, down-talking him as a shepherd. Like, they're setting up this idea of, you call us people who subtract, but we're just doing our job. Like, they're very spiteful of the farmers that they're protecting, the shepherds, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They're critiquing the system, and then Zeth almost acts out of spite and then acts out of self-defense. So interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It's also the verb of to spite someone, it implies it being deliberate, you know, not just, you know, obviously we know the connotations of the word doing something spiteful is, or out of spite is, I'm maliciously intentionally trying to hurt or offend you, right? So yeah, but that doesn't necessarily give me any answers of what exactly is the function of this unmade, but that's my thought right now, is it's largely tied into the aspects of spitefulness. Maybe on a more like individualistic, manipulative level than, like, you know, like we were just talking about the thrill, how it's like a primal urge, like a nature response for violence, I'd suppose. This feels, you know, more like ruin. I think that was actually a really good comparison.
When I first read Mistborn, I could not get the names Zeth and Zane out of my head conflated. I kept putting those two names together. And so part of me just might be trying to connect those two characters, but it felt very ruined to me of there's no rhyme or reason to this violence that's about to happen here. And then you get a soft voice that says, here now, what are you? Like, ominous voices in your head screams Mistborn to me.
And Trevor, you're comparing them. Zane was one of my favorites, easily the best part of Well of Ascension, but one of my favorite parts in the trilogy. And it's, you know, it's just the edgy assassin-esque character. Yeah. Is just really cool. And then they both have tormenting voices in their head. I mean, it's just, Brandon knew what he was doing. You know, they're not literally connected, but they're symbolically connected, you know.
After I got over the shock of the chapter, which took me several minutes, it did make me laugh a little bit. We have yet another voice in Zeth's head that we've added to the amount of people talking to Zeth in his head, well, not subtracted.
Well, here's the question, though, right? Zeth hears voices from the shadows that he claims is the voices of those he's killed. Yep. Seems very plausible to me that that's not true, and that he has always, throughout this whole time, heard this specific unmade in his head.
I wonder if it actually could be both, and that you have to kill someone to get this unmade in your head, and then as a side effect, you also get voices of everybody you've killed in your head. So, like, this unmade is now in his head, but also you start hearing screams, and that's a side effect of being possessed, for lack of a better word, by an unmade.
Yeah, could be.
I hate to keep bringing up the ruin correlation here, but I mean, ruin is deliberate about showing up as other people, like being deceptive in that way.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you want to attribute that deception, could easily be that. Like, it could be Zeth is hearing the voice of someone he, like, in his head, he hears the voice of a specific person that he killed, but it is not that person who he's hearing, right? Like, it's this unmade.
Before we wrap up, I do want to press home the point. I think there is something contractual that just happened to allow this unmade into Zeth's head. I don't think it was just a coincidence that he killed someone that he subtracted for the first time, and then he heard a voice. I think this unmade works off of a definitive, you have killed someone, therefore I get influence over you.
Something I just thought of as well, right? Last week we talked about, we didn't really talk about it much, but I made a mention of neither Zeth nor his high spren know what they're cleansing from Shinovar.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's going to realize that the voices in his head are this unmade and that's what they'll be cleansing from Shinovar? Maybe they'll
do
something to this unmade or some, I don't know.
I'm very curious if he's telling this to Kaladin. Because in last week and the week before, in all of day two, we had flashback to Zeth chapters, and then current day Zeth and Kaladin would talk about it. So Zeth was telling him the story, was telling Kaladin the story. If Zeth is telling Kaladin this story right here, Kaladin's going to key into this of, don't you understand that you heard a voice right after you killed someone, that there's something there. We need to talk. We need to have this discussion. So if Kaladin is now aware of this story, yes, I think cleansing Shinovar of this unmade absolutely would be part of it.
I think Zeth knows. I'm very curious to see if Kaladin and Zeth are going to talk about this, but I think Zeth is going to know full well that this is an unmade because he was so specific when Nael was saying, you need to choose a quest. It's like Zeth instantly knew, oh, I need to go cleanse Shinovar. And as they've been coming into Shinovar and Kaladin's asking questions, I think Zeth knows what's going on here. I think Zeth knows full well what he's up against, that this is an unmade, that this is, he knows all the things. He's just either in denial or intentionally not facing things. Maybe that's the same thing. Or all the above.
I think you're right, Elliot. And it just clicked for me as to how or why. So like I said, seemingly Zeth and his friend don't know what they're coming to Shinovar to cleanse. It's this whole like, oh, we'll know when we know type of thing. But you make a great point. Zeth instantly knows he wants to cleanse Shinovar, and I think you're right. He knows of what, or at least somewhat knows. So we talked about this before as well. Kaladin and Zeth say in the past, Kaladin kind of raises this point of, if you're not like Zeth refers to himself as truthless and fully responsible for all these things, etc., right? Kaladin has said, you had the realization, in Words of Radiance, and knew you were not truthless. Therefore, a lot of this is different. Like everything changes with that. You were not truthless, so the way that you're viewing yourself is flawed. Like there's a lot to unpack here. I feel like in the same way that Zeth hasn't acknowledged that, I feel like we'll see with the rest of these flashback chapters, but I could see that his experience with this unmade would lead him towards the whole becoming truthless situation. And basically that whole sentiment coming full circle. Of him realizing he's not truthless, or accepting that, more so than realizing. And, I feel like that would all kind of tie together.
I'm very curious how far into the book we're getting Zeth flashback chapters. Are we going to learn about some trial in front of some Shin people that name him truthless? Are we going to not get much of that and we're going to jump to him already being exiled? The more I learn about flashback Zeth, the more I am curious how much we're going to get. Because we know we've got the border of the puzzle for flashback Zeth. We know how it ends, but it's really interesting to me how he is named truthless and exactly what he claims after this point. to, you know, challenge the system and then get named truthless?
I think we're going to see a bit. I think it's going to be largely front loaded. You're right. We know where it's headed. And I feel like this was, to bring my words back up, I feel like this was the tipping point where that's going to start going pretty quick. I think we've seen a little bit of, like, you know, Zeth and his family questioning things, whatever, his inability to make decisions and to think dynamically. And here's this, everything hits the fan. I think we're going to start seeing this go real quick. Not necessarily like, oh, by the end of day four, we're going to be done. But the next 2 or 3 Zeth flashbacks that we have, I think are going to cover a lot of that crucial ground that we're talking about, filling in a lot of those missing pieces. I think as we get further, I think once we're at like day 8 or so, I kind of don't think we're going to see more Zeth flashback. I think we will see a lot more Zeth current day, cleansing Shinovar perhaps, but I think those pieces are going to be filled in soon. Fingers crossed for me, at least. I would like to see it. So,
anything else before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I'm equally intrigued by our Zeth flashback chapter. So more of those, please, Brandon. More of those.
Kind of a wrap-up question for you guys. Who, for the book so far, since we're all on the same page, we can all answer this. Who's been your surprise storyline that you're like most invested in so far that you weren't expecting? Because there's several for me, and I'm wondering what you guys have. For me, I think it's Yonagon and Adolin. I really love Yonagon and Adolin in any scene that we're getting between them. I never would have put them in the same boat, put them in the same scene before this book, but because they are, I actually really enjoy them.
Yonagon has very much surprised me. I've really come to like him already, just from the, like, that one chapter of, like, he's asleep, right? That whole first POV we get with him. It has surprised me. One of the things, I blinked, so I'm trying to remember the point I had. I was very excited.
Gavinor?
No, I wasn't thinking about Gavinor. Oh, okay, I remember. So sorry. Okay. One of the things that surprised me, and it has been tied in a way to Adolin and Yonagon. What surprised me is setting up for these wars and battles. When this was initially brought up, whenever there was the realization that Odium is going to attack all these different cities, I was a little let down. I was a little let down because I felt like that was taking away from all the things we had to do in preparation for the Contest of Champions on day 10. However, I've started to change a little bit, and this is still to be determined because it could be a mess. It could be epic. We'll see. But it's changed my mind on this has changed a bit because, you know, I think having an epic battle in these scenes in this book is a must. Like, just having these really cool, epic war fronts, war battles and tactics. It's the moments that we often look for and the big highlights of our fantasy stories that we read, you know. I was a bit thrown off. I did not think that that's where the story would be going. But I also thought before we came into this book that the Contest of Champions would happen maybe at the end of part 2. And we'd have a traditional 5-part book and we'd see a bunch of stuff after that. So if it is all leading up to the Contest of Champions and that's the big thing, then I think it's actually going to be pretty cool to have these scenes, especially getting to see so many characters throughout. So I think the whole premise of these mini cities having a battlefront has been something that's grown on me for sure.
I don't know if I said it in the in these episodes, but I did say it in the previews. I was a little miffed or disappointed or whatever you want to say in the three surprise armies that we didn't know about. That seemed really out of left field to me. But I also agree with you. It has gone somewhere that I've enjoyed. We do need Adolin doing backflips and snapping the bad guy's neck to, you know, save the day. And he can't do that without an army to fight. Elliot?
I want to be boring and say that all the things I'm excited about are the things that I knew I was going to be excited about, namely Zeth, exploring more, Unmade, Teravangian and Odium. But that's probably a little unfair. I think the Teravangian as Odium is maybe the most surprising to me, how invested I am in those chapters. The fact that we're getting some consistent interlude chapters with Teravangian as Odium, I think is really fascinating. And then Trevor, you mentioned a second ago, I think Gavinor is the most recent version of that. We haven't seen much, but the fact that he just got sucked into the spiritual realm along with all of our other characters, that has me really intrigued. We knew Gavinor was going to be something in this book, but the fact that it's now happening, of all our major characters just had a major twist event happen to them and Gavinor's with them, where's that going to go? Those are my big unforeseen interests, I think.
Gonna throw my other one out there. Of course, obviously, my favorites and what I've been looking forward to most is Zeth and Kaladin, etc. But the ones I wasn't expecting that have been really awesome were, I've loved the stuff with Kalak. Kalak and Shallan has been way more, I've been way more invested in those, her storyline and the inclusion of Kalak in the story as well, this book. But that's a good question. Oh, I was also going to tack on to that. So far, you know, we always have our end of the book ratings. So far, this book, the POV, like the point of view, has been a 10 out of 10, easy. Like, it's probably my favorite book from the point of view lens. You know, the last two episodes, we just had Adolin and Zeth point of view. So, you know, I'm a bit on a high right now, but I think that's been a huge plus for me, is the point of view in this book has been awesome.
Sounds good. All right. Next week, we will be doing chapters 40, 41, and 42. So we can reconvene with those next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Let's do it.
Toodles.